I mean, I think we're doing an okay job. The puck's not going in, which is frustrating, but there's chances coming. You know, we're trying to focus on our structure, and I think our entries have been good. We're trying to get pucks to the net, trying to create rebounds and traffic, and again, obviously, it's, you know, all about results, but there's stuff going on around there. That's good, and it's just a matter of, you know, getting the puck across the line.
I mean, we're getting our looks. I think we really are. I think we've done a pretty good job of entering. It's just staying confident in it, knowing that we have the people in here to make it successful. You know, we're talking about how to try to make it better, try to just relieve pressure a little better and support each other a little better. So that's what we'll do over these next few days, trying to figure out how we can just be better and help our team win a little bit.
Ben, morning show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Yeah, power play goal would have helped yesterday. There's just no question about it.
Boy, would it have.
0-for-5 on the power play were the Toronto Maple Leafs, now clicking along at less than 10% this postseason after finally breaking through in the first round last year on the strength of actually scoring on the 5-on-4. All right, let's talk to Justin Bourne of Real Kipper and Bourne. Good morning, Bourne. Thanks for doing this.
No problem. Good morning. Good morning.
So what if I told you before the series that the difference in this series would be goaltending and special teams? That would have rang pretty true, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have made sense. It is a little concerning that the two games the Leafs have lost have looked like the way you would expect the Leafs to lose their two games. So certainly the holes to patch were not just regular season blips. This is still an issue.
And we're having the same conversation about the power play that we always do. I mean, Ben and I broke it down, you know, not quite as astutely as you're capable of, but we tried our best. But it's like the thing I keep coming back to is it's the seventh best power play in the NHL over the course of a season. This is a unit that was clipping at 50% in the month of February. And, you know, they are not as good as the unit that was at 50%, but they aren't this bad either. What do you think it is about the collection of talent? Is it it's not a personnel issue to have a good power play, but is it one for a group that can go so dormant at times? I mean, just looking from the outside, the easiest thing to say is, yeah, just filter more stuff at net and hope you get some goals like that Bertuzzi one you got last night. But what do you make of the Jekyll and Hyde Leafs power play, and how funny is it that it's the exact same thing we've kind of seen all season long?
Yeah, it's, you know, we talked about it on Leafs Talk postgame last night, trying to sort of dissect the issues. And there's a few of them. You know, one of them is, you know, to do all the sort of like little deception things to make the little backdoor plays and, you know, fakes into the bumper, and you see good teams like Tampa Bay do, you need the puck to be moving around so that the penalty killers are changing their shape, trying to figure out who they're covering. Like, you have to start with puck movement before you can even find seams and holes. And right now it just feels like it goes to one guy and he hangs on to it, and the PK is set. Like, they have plenty of time to get set, so it's tough to do anything too cute. And then further to that is, you know, they seem very one-dimensional right now. Like, when Mitch Marner plays low, when he plays the goal line, he's pretty creative. He can make plays into Tavares and make him a weapon. But right now, like, Marner's not a threat to shoot. Riley's never been a threat to shoot. Mm. You know, Tavares doesn't make plays. So it's all kind of, how do we get Austin Matthews a shot? And if you're a PK, you would be set up to defend one thing. How do we stop Austin Matthews from getting shots? So I think it's a matter of getting Marner down at the goal line and starting to utilize some of the other guys, Tavares or, you know, maybe Bertuzzi, but trying to find other things than just a shot for Austin.
Okay, it doesn't make sense that it hasn't worked, but it hasn't worked for a long time now. And I know there's no William Nylander. Maybe he's the elixir that clears it all up on Saturday. And I don't know necessarily what the personnel solution is. But, and again, like, there's no logical reason why your $40 million, or I guess, yeah, 30 without Nylander, can't effectively score on the man advantage. But this is not like just emerging in the postseason. It's been worse in these three games than it was down the stretch during the regular season. But it's bad during the regular season. I know, you got to stack the top power play unit. They got to play a minute and a half. They stink and have stunk for a long time. Why not just go nuclear with it? And who cares? Like, it can't be any worse than it's been.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't score, so you're right. You can't score less than zero.
Correct.
So, no, that's a fair point.
They gave up shorthanded breakaways, too.
Yeah, touche. You actually can't go negative. That was a bad idea. bad take. But yeah, you could throw Max Domi out there, a guy who seems energized and able to find some guys who are open out there. You could split it up in that way. Problem is, you don't have another defensive option. I think Liljegren has not done anything that has helped the Leafs so far in this series, and I don't think being on the power play is going to change that either. So they're just pretty limited with, like, who do you go to next and how does that look if you haven't done it this year. So, you know, they've done Matthews on the opposite flank. You could try that. You know, there's a few ways you could tweak this unit, but at the end of the day, I'd rather live and die with the guys we've given all the money to and say, hey, it's up to you.
Yeah,
they've been dying.
I'm with you there. And yeah, I do feel like it's dying. That's generally speaking how it's gone. You mentioned Riley there, and obviously some of this, hey, if it wants to happen on the power play, that would go a long way. But I don't feel like we've had the full playoff Mo. I felt like you were getting it for half a second there when it looks like he scores and he banks it in off Bertuzzi, who gets credit for it. But what have you seen in Riley that's been different from the guy we saw that was just a difference maker night in and night out in the series against Tampa last year?
You know, I liked him more last night than I did in games one and two, but generally I would agree that he hasn't had that that sort of pop. I don't know. I think last year, and this, I don't know if it's a matter of Shen versus Labushkin, you know, freeing him up a little bit more. Like, he just seemed more offensively involved last year, where he was up the rink and making plays, and he just felt very passive to me through a few games, which, you know, you don't get burned when you're passive and you're not on highlight reels, but the Leafs have a very standard type of D, right? Like Benoit, McCabe, Labushkin, these guys all want to run into you, and that's great. But they need someone who can skate the puck and be involved in the offense. And so far, I think Morgan just needs to be a little bit more offensively aggressive, jump up in the rush and get involved.
The panel was talking about how the Matthews line remains on the ice after Bertuzzi ties the game up at twos, the puck bounces off his leg and then off a Bruins player and then into the back of the net. And they're on the ice when Brad Marchand jumps back on the ice, and the shift is lasting, you know, about a minute at that point as it goes back into the Leaf zone. Did you have any problem with the process there, Sheldon Keefe leaving that line out there after they'd been on for about 35 seconds at that point?
No, I feel like after you score a goal, like, you get this like adrenaline rush. Well, you know, you have this, your legs are usually feel really good, and you know, they're the best line on the team. So, you know, it ends up the puck going in their end and kind of ends up, you know, it's a funny way that the goal gets scored. Like, Samsonov drops his stick and Marchand finds a little pocket there. But more than, you know, I don't look at that goal and go, that's a product of tired defensive players. It's more just, you know, Domi probably has to be a little tighter on the coverage there. And I think they got a little bit unlucky, and it's a great shot too. So no, I'm not going to fault dead legs on that one.
Yeah, I was thinking, I'll be honest, I had the exact same thought of like, oh, you're keeping him out there still. But then you mentioned the adrenaline thing, and that's so true. And yeah, God, it's like it had to be him, and that shot had to be so perfect right there. I don't know that I want to talk about him, but I'm sure he'll come up in this answer. The physicality. there was that one shift last night. Benoit takes off Pastrnak's head. Revo maims and nearly murders someone mere seconds later. The Leafs have not shied away in that regard. It was obviously a massive talking point heading into the series. I think everyone would be pretty happy with how the Leafs have handled discipline and physicality. I know they're different things. The physicality, everyone be happy with. Discipline, that's a different story. How much of an impact do you think that's had kind of through the first three games? And have the Leafs maybe to a certain extent over-prioritized it? And, you know, I know it's not as simple as you think less about hitting and one more goal goes in, but God, it's like if we're talking about the ledger that matters the most in the series, maybe it's not the hit column, and it's scratching a couple more across.
Yeah, but you know what? This is a weird year. Like, I feel like going into game four that the Leafs are the better physical team, the more physical team. Like, Peak being out for Boston hurts them. Grizzly isn't big, but he runs into guys. Like, him being out hurts them too. And it felt like there was a moment in the game last night where it's like, huh, like, the Leafs are really putting the Bruins on their heels with all this contact. You know, Montgomery is starting to complain to the ref. Marchand is, you know, getting over-involved with Bertuzzi and tangled. Pastrnak seems frustrated. Like, there's a moment where I was like, this is usually what the Leafs get into, where you get their coach complaining and their best guys looking frustrated. But it felt like it was working. And so, to me, you get a win, in that game last night, and you'd feel great about how the Bruins are on their heels and feel like they're chasing the game. You didn't win, and so maybe the Bruins can exact a little confidence out of that. But I do feel like that sets them up pretty well going on in this series, that Boston has to know they're not the bigger, heavier, meaner team in this series. The Leafs ended up with a bunch of D who play that way. So hopefully that lets the Stars, you know, feel a little bit more free, knowing that they got, you know, some guys on their side that'll back them up too. So the idea with contact is it pays off later in the series. Let's find out.
Let's find out how the rest of the series is officiated too, and maybe Brad Marchand at some point gonna land himself in the penalty box. Hasn't happened yet.
Can't happen. No, it'd be bridge too far. He's too good. He's just respected.
And Sheldon Keefe made explicit mention of Brad Marchand and give him all the credit, and like it didn't explicitly criticize the officiating in that game. And the Leafs had the majority of the power play chances. And boy, you got to score on one of those if you get five. I get it. But there were some egregious non-calls as well. I mean, for me, the worst is John Tavares when, you know, the Leafs don't automatically obviously score on a 6-on-5. They've been very good in that situation all season long. You effectively end the game on a very marginal call. I don't know what you're supposed to do about the officiating, but you, knowing Sheldon Keefe the way you do, how do you think he's processing a game that's officiated in that manner? And do you think his approach publicly after the game is the best way to go about trying to impact the way Game 4 is officiated?
Well, consider who Sheldon has played the last three, or coached against the last three playoff series he's coached. It's been John Cooper, then Paul Maurice. And there aren't two coaches in the NHL who are more intent on trying to manipulate the series through the media, through their post-game comments, and to the officials. Like, those two guys are always going, well, you know, maybe it looked like this, but here's what's really going on. And I feel like this is Keith taking a page out of their book and trying to influence the officiating in the series just by getting more attention on Marchand and noting that, yeah, this guy hasn't taken a penalty yet in the series despite all that play. So, I mean, there's no doubt about it. The guy is extremely good at it. It is an art, and he is the best to have done it. You know, it's just a matter of he is a guy that can get genuinely frustrated too. And you don't want him to get these little wins along the way. So here's to hoping, you know, that they can put him on his heels. I actually like Bertuzzi and him going at it all series long. It like nullifies the guy to me. He doesn't bother any of their legitimate stars. He's not in Matthews' ear or Marner's ear. So I'm fine with letting those two continue to go at it. Keith's just trying to get the ref to say, hey, sometimes it's got to be their guy going to the box too.
Last one for you, Bordy. We talk all the time about finding the line. How hard is it for Sheldon Keefe to find that right line? Is it harder for him being head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs? And unlike John Cooper, he doesn't have a couple rings he can go throw in the official or the NHL's face. Mm-hmm. How much harder is it for Sheldon Keefe? I mean, Daryl Sutter came into Toronto and said he's been getting hosed here for 30 years and the league was just fine with it. I don't think Keefe could have said exactly that same thing. How much finer of a line does he have to walk than some of his contemporaries?
Yeah, it is. That's a great point that you don't quite have the cachet, and there's no way to go to the media and try to get the word out that, you know, the officiating needs to be better in this one area without looking like you're whining a little bit. So that's just kind of, you know, what you take on as the coach in that moment. But I do feel like it would have been a conscious effort to go out there and draw that attention. So it's a fine line for sure, but it does feel like something that was calculated. So, things are set up okay in this series for the Leafs. You guys aren't going to believe this, but they just need Nylander back so bad. So hopefully that helps.
Yeah. And for Linus Allmark to start on Saturday, that'd be cool.
Please.
That would help too. Yeah.
Thanks, Borny.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
See you, buddy. Justin Bourne, Real Kipper and Bourne, and Leafs Talk, which you can watch and listen to on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and watch on Sportsnet Plus.
I wonder what type of sandwiches he's making. Normally he's got to get sandwiches going for the kids.
My kids don't eat sandwiches, so I'm in the free and clear. I made them last night. They eat turkey pepperoni, just like slices of turkey pepperoni.
Okay.
And like a croissant and some vegetables.
You put the accent on it.
Croissant.
I just eat croissants myself.
No, not me.
Okay.
French is one of the official languages of this country, so okay. I feel that gives me carte blanche.
Yeah, well.
To say croissant.
Ever since the Montreal series, it's tenuous at best for me. Slipping it in.
okay, the officiating is very infuriating, okay? Like, there's just no question about it. That's like, it's pretty nuts, really, that we're here through 180 minutes of hockey. Mm-hmm. Brad Marchand has taken zero penalty minutes.
Yeah, and it's even crazier. Like, I don't know, my eyes, like, you know, maybe it's like an allegory of the cave thing, but I feel like I'm seeing it. I could have swore he like, has been slashing and hacking guys away from the puck. It was just me. I don't know. I feel like if I look at him in a hockey game, he commits an infraction or two.
Yeah, and maybe Tyler Bertuzzi more easily than he normally would was upended at center ice just before Trent Frederick fires it to the back of the net.
But like, when that happened the game before and a guy was more easily upended than maybe he otherwise would have. I don't know. It's odd. It's almost like there's a double standard and one guy gets to play because he won a championship 13 years ago. He gets to play by a different set of rules than everybody else. It's almost like that.
Yeah.
And then Charlie McAvoy also is now winner for reasons. I don't know. He gets benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
there.
You would think that the 69 goal scorer during the regular season, single-handedly won game two being upended with the puck nowhere to be seen behind the net would be... Yeah, there would be, as much as Charlie McAvoy is a very good defenseman and the best defenseman on the ice in the series, like Austin Matthews is the best player on the ice, and you would have figured it. This discussion is difficult for me because it's very true that, like, the Leafs get a different whistle yesterday and the game goes a different way. But they got enough of a whistle, right? Like, they got enough, man. They did. They did get enough to win the hockey game.
I'm not mad about a single call they didn't get other than the one that should have wiped a goal off the board. That's it. And it's tough because I've watched it happen with my own eyes and everyone. And then everyone in the hockey world lined up to say, like, you have to call that in that instance. You have to. And I know it's not apples to oranges. It's like Trent Frederick wasn't walking in all alone because of what happened with Bertuzzi and Marchand. But it's infuriating. Okay. And again, like, it's just, it's all part and parcel. It's like Nazem Kadri and Brad Marchand are completely different animals. Like, what Brad Marchand did last night was not maiming and trying to kill Jake DeBrusque like what happened with Nazem Kadri. But again, it goes back to, like, and I understand the team success is a massive part of it, so you can't just paper over it, but if Brad Marchand just wore the blue and white jersey, would we not be having all the conversations about he can't make the refs look this bad and you can't put them in this position and it's the way he is making them look? I've heard it with so many Leafs over the years, and I will say it again. The winning matters. It shouldn't, but it does. The fact that he has the track record and he was able to survive the early part of his career to now be viewed this way. He has earned it to a certain extent, but it's tough when every guy in this market who tries to earn it in that way is seen as putting the refs on blast and putting them in a bad position, but it's never the case with him.
Okay, if we're looking at one instance where Maple Leafs could have been penalized and weren't, but might have been a hinge point in the entire hockey game, and it did not happen within the course of play. It's the Max Domi little bump on Jeremy Swayman, which is like, it's kind of funny. And Swayman flops around he's been poleaxed to get it. And I just view that as like gamesmanship, but like kind of stupid and non-impactful.
Very dumb.
Except it might have been impactful.
I think it was.
Because everybody saw it. The Bruins are losing their minds.
Screaming.
The officials saw it, right? Yeah, like they don't want to call a penalty on that. They don't want that to become a thing. But like, they, if you want to talk about them feeling embarrassed or like they're not being respected, or maybe we have to officiate this game a little bit differently, might have had some impact on the rest of the game. The game was officiated differently from that point.
It was. What should, like, I'm just asking you, and I don't know what the right answer is. What they should have called Max Domi for roughing, for slashing?
Yeah.
For roughing? Like, that, I assume, is what the penalty would have
been like. Like, you can call anything there. You can call him for roughing. You can call him for tripping, even though it's not over the course of play.
Did he go out of his way to, did either guy go out of their way to avoid that collision?
I suppose not.
I'm not saying that I wouldn't be sitting here screaming bloody murder the other way, but it's just, I have very little sympathy for, like, they missed this infraction that impacted absolutely nothing, so they couldn't have possibly called Brad Marchand for either of the two penalties he committed or McAvoy for the one he committed. You're right. It's a hinge point. there's no way to look at it. Would the Leafs have, we do your deal all the time of, would they have gladly taken no special teams? The whole series of 5-on-5,
I mean,
a billion
that's
percent.
Pretty clear
now,
that at this point.
They, no, no. Here's what I'm
series,
saying, though.
They would have said no special teams plays.
Would they have taken your deal of, like, just call Max Domi for whatever annoying penalty you would have given him there and then let the game play out? Because you're right. I think you'd never get them to admit it, even if we had the thing that would just ultimately frustrate us all of having a pool reporter there asking the refs these questions. They'd never admit it. But I do think that much like the makeup call immediately after the Frederick goal was pretty proof positive of what they thought happened there.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost equally as positive with the lack of calls on the Marchand stuff and everything that happened afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, well, what I would prefer is, yeah, the call, if the non-call there is impacting the rest of your calls the rest of the game, just call the thing then.
Yep.
Just do the thing instead of react, right? It's the cover-up, not the crime. It's always the cover-up, not the crime.
Well, I mean, I will say you could just don't commit a crime also. If I'm just going to give advice to the referees or our listeners out there.
Listen, are you screaming from the rooftops if the officials do call Max Domi for a rough or a trip in that instance?
It depends how the rest of the game is called. If it's prison rules out there, then yeah, I'm pretty aggrieved that two guys bumping into one another on...
I think we can all agree, though, that that's Max Domi going out of his way to run into Jeremy Swayman, right?
It's Max Domi not capitulating to the...
Oh, come on.
But it's all... Okay, but whatever Max Domi's doing, Jeremy Swayman's doing the exact same thing there.
What, like intentionally running into him so he can fall over?
I think he's like, I'm not going to avoid Max Domi. Like, I'm going to skate this. Mm-hmm. I think it's the... This is not quite it, but for a Simpsons guy, it's perfect. This is the Bart, like, hey, man, I'm just walking with my arms going.
Yeah.
Whatever happens to you, I think that's kind of what was happening from both parties. If I'm going to put, like, a blame on it, it's like, yeah, sure, 65% Max Domi, I'll give you that.
I think, ultimately, it shouldn't... The way I would have officiated it, all in retrospect.
Oh, God, this is what we've all been waiting for at 7:24 this morning. How would Ben have called all the penalties last night?
Well,
all right, first things first, cross-check him when to start. No.
I think, actually, the Maple Leafs benefit from, like, more prison rules in the series. But, yeah, anyways, in that instance, I would have said, yeah, I'm not calling that. That's stupid. Like, guys, knock it off. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that anymore.
Yep.
I wouldn't have called that. But I also wouldn't have had it impact the rest of my decision-making for the rest of the game, which I guess we can only infer happened. But yeah, the game is officiated differently from that point on. And the officials feel like one was like they were embarrassed. That's the only way I can come away from that thinking is that there was a level of embarrassment from the officials on the ice that they thought Max Domi thought he could run into Jeremy Swayman in a TV timeout and there would be no adjudication against him in that moment.
Yeah, that is playoff, like, gamesmanship type stuff, and it definitely impacted the way the game is officiated. And I don't want to make the, like, for doing the, like, well, why don't you make the whole plane out of the black, I don't want to make the whole show out of officiating talk, because I think there were a million other things that were impactful there. It's just impossible not to be frustrated about the way that played out regarding the guys in stripes last night.
Well, you know what? So you can't really impact the officiating. Hey, Sheldon Keefe did his best to try and impact the calls that he hopes to receive on Saturday when the series resumes. I mean, what you can do less about is the thing that is also bubbling up on social media,
yes,
and that's the impact of, or lack thereof, of the fans. Now, this is a Leafs team that has now lost 5 straight home playoff games, right? Okay. And, you know, maybe that's just a weird anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's Sheldon Keefe overthinking it. Maybe that's him, you know, tinkering too much because he has last change.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is because of the atmosphere. Like, we have to be open to that possibility. I don't know necessarily what you're supposed to do about that again. Like, when Ryan Reeves is throwing the body.
Yeah.
When Simon Benoit is throwing the body, when Jake McCabe
had
a great hit in that game too. Again, like, most hits in a postseason game through the first 40 minutes in 6 years.
It was awesome.
Everybody on the ice had a hit. When that's happening, when the Leafs are scoring, it sounds electric there. And again, I'm just talking about it as a viewer on television, but people in the building.
Oh, game 6, though, we will have a referendum on this.
If there is one.
Should I get there?
Yeah, people in the building clearly seem to, there are certain specific people who seem to think, and there are some former NHL players who agree that it is impactful to the game. It might be part of the reason why the Leafs haven't had the home postseason record that they should. Is it anything other than, hey, we can just talk about it and boy, it sucks. And like, what are you going to do? Tickets are astronomically expensive. And that's the nature of playing in a big market like Toronto. And that the true fans, the more boisterous, passionate fans are the ones that can afford the tickets that go to see the Leafs during the regular season in Buffalo. I mean, what is there to do with what is clearly something? Maybe not everything, but it's clearly something.
Anybody who's mad at this has exactly one place to look. There's not one person to blame, but there's one place to look. And it is the hockey team that all those people are supposed to be cheering for. I've heard a lot of comparisons to, go look at all these other great Canadian markets. Go look at Vancouver. Look at their crowd cheering, thank you, Casey, or you can do it, or orange slices for everybody, or whatever it was they were chanting right before disaster struck. You know what they haven't, you know what they've seen in their life, like most of the people who care about that team? A run to a Stanley Cup final. I know they burned their city to the ground afterwards. And I know it was 2011. That's not 5 years ago, but that's like, you could touch that. You could smell it. You could feel it. The Edmonton Oilers made a run to a conference final. Even the Winnipeg Jets in that bubble Canadian series, they went and won a series. Okay. And it's Winnipeg. They should just be thankful they have anything there. Let's be honest. So I look at it and I say that, yeah, you can be frustrated about the way the crowd is. And should the crowd be better at times? Fair criticism. But it has been authored by one group of people and one group of people only. And it's not the person setting the ticket price at $600 to get into the lower bowl or whatever it is. Could that help things? Maybe a little. But the team has authored this. If any of these other fan bases that we sit here and talk about, if the Edmonton Oilers with their golden generation of a million first overall picks and Draisaitl and McDavid, if what they had to show for it was one playoff series win, do you know what it would be? Be a tight, nervous building that expected everything to go wrong at all points in time. So I understand the guy who has been who went and sat in the square at noon yesterday so he could be there saying, put me in there and it'll be better. Agreed. I bet it would. But to take the onus off of the team that has authored this nervous crowd and fan base, you don't think the people want every excuse to be allowed and to believe? How can they? So I hear the criticism. I think it's fair. But don't put it on the fans. The fans are just reacting to what they've seen for basically a generation now. So, fair criticism, sure. But don't put it on the fans. Put it on the team that has authored the nervous nature of this fan base.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't even considered that that's the overriding force driving the lack of boisterousness.
Everyone goes back to the 0-2 Sunday. You know what that team was in? A conference final. They actually saw a team, and God, William Nylander's not playing. How could they possibly? Matt Sundin, the only good center on the team. No offense to all the other centers that I loved when I was a kid, but I have different opinions of now that I've looked at stuff with a more, you know, alive eye. I look at it and I say that you give them a run, you give them a reason to believe, and they will take it. Even the lawyer in his kajillion dollar suit who gets there 5 minutes after puck drop, even that guy is going to be losing his mind if you actually give him a reason to.
I was driving behind a Rolls Royce yesterday on my way home.
I told you, man, they're out there. It's like I saw a Maybach driving in this. I don't like it.
Anyways, I don't discount the possibility that that is impacting things. I do think it's more likely that the reason the crowd is not proactive is, like, one, that's not a Canadian sports fan crowd generally. Like, if you've ever been to a sporting event in the United States, there are people, they're just, like, a little more outgoing in
Yahoos.
General, right?
It's like
any
jingoism,
excuse to scream. Like, they love it. God. They love screaming. In the middle of the street, they're screaming. Yeah, it's just not necessarily as Canadian a mentality as it is in many big sports markets in the United States. And secondarily, I do think there's an element of, they want the Maple Leafs to win, but not as much as the guy who's made it much more a part of his personality. And it's his like escape from the 45, 50 hour work week, like in the dark, wet pit.
Yeah.
Like that guy cares more because, you know, he has to grind more during the rest of his life. And like, it's his release. And like, yeah, he's so frustrated that it hasn't worked out that way. Mm-hmm. I also think, well, one, I'm never going to blame the fans for anything.
Right.
And secondarily, yeah, if that's the reason why the Leafs haven't had the postseason success, that's a failing of the players, that they need some like extra, even if it's a 1% boost from the fan base. Or that's, if that thought process even enters the minds of one single Toronto Maple Leafs player over the last near decade, that's a fatal flaw. Like, that's insane. That's nuts.
Also, if you think that's a problem, we saw proof of concept last night that it literally takes one. Like, let's say they are sitting there and they're like, God, we can only be 99% of ourselves because the fans aren't giving us that extra 1%. Yeah. Let's say, I highly doubt that's happening. Let's say that's the excuse that's being made. All that it takes is one shift from the guys who
do a good thing.
But it also can be from the guys who matter the least on the team.
Sure.
The Benoit and Revo shift.
Yes.
And nothing happened in the grand scheme of things in the game. I think it was 1-0 at the time or whatever the score was. It was the exact same score at the end of that shift at the beginning.
Yeah.
Building was rocking. Revo was feeling it. Mm-hmm. That's all it takes. I think when people hear, you know, because I don't think it's the world's most original opinion that it's like if the team plays better, the fans will get behind it. But I think people hear that and they go, yeah, it's pretty easy to be excited when your team's winning 5-0. Yeah, agreed. But they don't need 5-0. They just need 2 or 3 of those Revo or Benoit hits in the first couple minutes of a game. And also, if we're going to do crowd stuff last night, and he pretty quickly adjudicated it and got back in everybody's good books, but taking a puck over the glass penalty 30 seconds into the game or whatever it was from Benoit, not the way to go about it. Mm-hmm. So maybe not the night to pile on all the fans. Buddy, I would love nothing more than to do a swap. Make all the people in their suits go stand out in the square and put all the square people in the lower bowl. The square people. Who wouldn't? God, does make them sound like creatures. But I got to be honest, not unfair. Mm. I would love to see that. It's never going to happen. Like, Ballmer's doing his thing in L.A. where it's like if you show up early, it's like basically T-ball. It's like, all right, first person here gets the best seat, but you got to be loud. And that's an idea, but you can't.
Yeah,
market forces, you're not doing it.
Hold on. That's like a singular owner. That's not MLSE.
Exactly.
Who's like, there's no like Mr. Maple Leafs who owns MLSE. It's
a conglomerate. And that works so well. When it was Harold Ballard. Yeah, like, obviously.
Well, sure. Yeah. Like, there's the opposite end of the spectrum. But no, this is a money-making operation. They operate in a cap world, though, and they've spent plenty in the areas that they can spend on.
Yep.
Very comfortable for maybe these players, as we well know.
And I maintain, like, even that guy who's driving his, like, $500,000 car down to the game and is like, why can't I park it right at center ice? It'd be very convenient for me. Like, even that guy is going to be losing his mind if you get to a conference final.
Sure. Is he going to be losing his mind if the Leafs are down 1-0 in the first period of game one of the conference final?
No.
Yeah, probably not. It's a reactive crowd. That's the way it is.
Well, but I also think there's more goodwill built up. Like, you get to a conference final, it's like, that guy is never going to be Joe the Plumber or whoever that guy is in Alberta with, like, his Leafs cave that I see on social media. He's never going to be that guy. Mm-hmm. But you can bring him along. You can pull them along. You can get them excited.
Yeah, I didn't view the lack of noise at times because it was a nervous fan base or a fan base that was like metaphorically rolling their eyes, right? Like I felt like, there wasn't anything to cheer for. Leafs are, you know, down a goal or, there'd been nothing. Like the rare, in the second period, there was a stretch of time there where there wasn't a ton happening. It's a very reactive crowd.
Yeah.
Canadian sports fans are generally more reactive than proactive.
And again, you have $40 million of forwards. I know one of them's not playing, but you're like, they could get the crowd excited as well. Like, if it's a reactive 100%. Crowd, it's like you could give them something to be excited about.
Correct. All right, when we come back, Have a look around the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs where, boy, Oilers are on.
The crowd must have been loving it when they lost last night. Like, woo! Yeah. We love hockey. I'm reacting.
Yeah. Yeah, surely, right?
Well, maybe Stuart Skinner is going to get the Casey DeSmith treatment in Game 3. Let's go, Stuart.
Come on, Stewie. Stuart Little, come on.
Hopefully he's staying away from social media today. All right, that and more next. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Show Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Started off so well for the Edmonton Oilers in game one. Couple of goals. And
yeah.
Zach Hyman hat trick and Connor McDavid 5 assists.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Surely it continued. Yeah.
Well, I saw some takes that, hey, you put the foot down in the opening 20 minutes of game two and the Kings, they turn to dust. Like, probably not. It's just two home playoff games.
Yeah. And that you're supposed to lose.
Yeah, as dominant as you looked in game one, it's still a 7-4 scoreline.
Yeah.
Also, Stuart Skinner's in net. And, boy, some spectacular-looking goals in the hockey game.
Yep.
No question. But, yeah, like we do oftentimes, you and I mean, specifically. Mm. And, you know, Sheldon Keefe, too. It's like, that in five, it's too many.
Yes,
and I know they get in a couple of minutes of an extra period in there, but expected goals, and all of them 5-on-5, by the way. Okay. The Oilers with one power play goal, but expected goals 5-on-5 against Stuart Skinner, 1.88.
Mm.
Actual goals, 5. And now for his career, Stuart Skinner, do you know what the gory details are about his playoff save percentage?
I'm betting not great.
It's not great. 879 career save percentage in 14 postseason games, all starts. You know Jack Campbell's career postseason save percentage?
I don't.
In 18 games, 14 starts. 920.
God. There's no way, obviously. No. Like, I feel like
I just,
that should go.
I just throwing it in there.
I just feel like people needed to hear that. Not that there's like an Oiler fan listening, but just in case they were, just let me do that for you. I joked with you in the break that the utility Campbell should serve as he should be Stuart Skinner's representative after games like this to come out and be like, I'm so sorry. It was all me, Jack Campbell, somehow. I'm at fault here. Yeah, oil needs stops, man. It's the story of before Knobloch got brought on and when they made the coaching change earlier in the year, it's been the story. They're going to score. Like, unlike the Leafs, the Oil are going to score. And, man, I mean, you find yourself in a split. It's far from the end of the world here, but, you know, the Oilers should pretty cleanly win that series, and it's going to be a gauntlet. I mean, this goes for any team that thinks they have a run ahead of them, but there's no easy series on the other side waiting for Edmonton. So if you can take care of business quickly in this series, it's only going to be beneficial. So, yeah, the extra game, the extra period, it's not helpful. I also don't know if you saw this. Zach Hyman. I don't know if he did this for me as payback for what Philippe Deneau did to Matthews in that Canadian series, but he smoked Deneau. Just clean headshot against playoffs. I have no problem. This isn't me being like, supplemental discipline. Mm-hmm. But it was as clean a headshot as you could possibly have. Zach Hyman does it all.
Yeah, he scores again. Like, he's just, it's unbelievable. Yeah, it's like, there's a world in which the Oilers win it all, and Zach Hyman is hoisting a Conn Smythe trophy.
Man,
like I said.
There's not.
What if he has all the goals and Connor McDavid has all the assists?
I think he's going to have a couple goals too, though. That's the thing.
Phil Kessel had a real case.
Yeah.
Once upon a time on the Sidney Crosby.
And then one of the guys who we think about won it, because that's how that.
But he could have. He could have won it.
I do wonder, and, you know, like, obviously, you talk about building up goodwill. Lord knows McDavid has done it in spades. I would like to play a what would the Leafs discourse be of the Leafs losing a game in which Connor McDavid is standing with his hands up in the crease as the puck is nowhere near in and then arguing with the official. It's like, I don't know, maybe play through the whistle and not celebrate your goals so much. I love this time of year. It's the best. You go from Leafs pain to just like other people's pain.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah.
wonderful. Mark Stone and the Golden Knights. They're never going to lose a game again, apparently.
A $100 million hockey team is pretty good, turns out. And Jake Oettinger isn't bad, but like, Jake Oettinger needs to be spectacular against the team with most talent.
How can you let in two goals? You can't.
You're not allowed.
You can't do that.
Not permitted. Yeah,
anyways. I feel very smart for having placed a future on Vegas the second they traded for Noah Hanifin.
Yeah, that was really prescient.
I'm happy to do that.
Good for you. NBA playoffs, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they needed like the final dying seconds and a big Shai shot to win game one. Looks more like the team that they should look against Zion Williamson yesterday. Celtics Heat is just something that's, I don't know, for whatever reason, the Heat have the Celtics number. And maybe not in the overall, like when we look back on the series, maybe this will be like a quaint little anecdote that they won game two. But the Celtics like just didn't, they, what were they, like 20-0 at home at one point this season? They're 1-1 at home during the postseason against a Miami Heat team that is stanky even with Jimmy Butler. But no Jimmy Butler? Miami now 4 playoff games in the last 2 seasons with 50% shooting from 3 against Boston. No other team has more than 1 against anyone.
Amazing.
It is a hilarious, hilarious confluence that allows this team. And when Jimmy Butler was in the lineup for some of those games, Jimmy Butler is not exactly some dead-eye three-point shooter. He just makes all his threes against the Boston Celtics. It's just hilarious that you have one team, for whatever reason, looking across the way at the other team, and it turns them into good shooters. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, look, how many times you heard this before? Make or miss league, and when you're making it 50%, it's going to be pretty hard to be beat. Obviously, some of that goes to the looks the Celtics are giving up, but so much more of it goes to Miami just being nuclear, like just full flamethrower from behind the arc. I love that this happens in the NBA. It's not supposed to. This is kind of almost, I mean, the stakes aren't there, and we'll see how the series actually plays out. But this is like old school Battle of Ontario stuff, where it's like the Celtics are supposed to be far and away the better team, and everyone all year long has been running away with it. We're not supposed to have upsets in the NBA playoffs, really. It's like, you know, we'll have like a 5-4 upset or something like that, but we're not supposed to have a team like this. The Heat have done it, and honestly, I think it is massive for the NBA. If you're not going to have the Warriors dynasty or LeBron being the de facto final team every year, you need the belief that anything can happen in any of these series. And for so long in the NBA, I mean, they literally played best of fives because there was no point to the first round. This is massive for the league. I still think they'd be better off with a true blue chip dynasty that we'd all think of forever and we could all hate. I still think that's what's best for the league, but if you're not going to have that, and that doesn't exist right now, this is such a better place to kind of operate.
Maybe that loss in game two will look like game one between the Raptors and Magic. Remember
that
first round series with Kawhi
in
2019? Magic makes a shot at the end of the game, win game one. But yeah, the Raptors bounce back 1-5. And then, of course, we know what happened in 2019, but maybe not. Like, the Orlando Magic are not Eric Spoelstra in the Miami Heat. By the way, Eric Spoelstra, Steve Kerr's assistant for the U.S. Olympic team in Paris this summer. I mean, it's 6-1, half dozen the other. But like, what Eric Spoelstra has done over the length and breadth of his career without some key cogs and under different circumstances is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, man, you also started with the idea of Shai having the game he had. Jamal's already had his buzzer beater. Canada is not, I almost said the Leafs. It's like, it is, the Maple Leafs. They're not going to go into the Olympics as favorites, obviously. But this is as good as you could possibly ask for. I mean, even like down the pecking order, not that we were worried about this, but Kelly Olynyk not putting any miles on the body right now with an arduous playoff run. Those two guys feeling as good as they possibly can. Like, you know, we'll see how the rest of the playoffs go, but them already having those moments, it just only bodes well for Canada basketball
Plus,
heading into Paris.
They ghost busted a little bit, right? Yeah. Like it's, Then now the expectation is to play well and beat some teams and maybe get into the medal round. That would be unbelievable. But it was, man, if you don't get into the Olympics, it's a nightmare scenario. It's like this golden generation is never going to exist. They've already busted the ghost. No, I can't wait for that Olympic basketball tournament this summer. Quickly, before we get to the Wakenreich.
Yeah.
I only saved a couple of minutes for this because we could probably do half a segment on on this is that Tiger Woods is going to get $100 million from the PGA Tour in equity.
Yeah, kind of.
Rory McIlroy is going to get $50 million in equity.
Yeah.
As thank you very much for not joining the LIV Tour. And all this money coming from all the sports owners across North America that have thrown the $3 billion at the PGA Tour. So what is it? $750 million is going to go to 36 golfers most deserving of this increase, right? To try and satiate some of the people that might be angry that they didn't take $300 million from LIV. And it's not the same. It's not the same. But if it works, and if it's like, this is a clear, to me, this is a clear attempt to stave off what we thought was already agreed to, but hasn't gone beyond like that handshake thing that happened before the money was infused into the PGA Tour. This is just like staving off the eventual merger between these two for as long as possible. And yeah, it's going to maybe hurt the PGA Tour's bottom line not to have Jon Rahm, and there's less interest and they're spending more money on these tournaments year over year over year. But like, who has more staying power? The PGA Tour, where at least they're making some money and there's some interest, or the LIV Tour? And as much as the Saudis have unlimited funds, they're not going to do 10 years of nobody caring about their product and existing in some other world region. Like, this is just another step in the direction of increasing the pressure on LIV to merge, not the PGA merging.
Yeah, and I think that it, I mean, the guys literally have skin in the game now. I mean, it was pretty apparent that Rory wanted and needed the PGA Tour to succeed, but he is literally an investor now. He has $50 million of, you know, eventually vesting shares of equity. Tiger obviously gets the most. It's not the billion that Tiger could have had. It's not the $600 million that Rahm got, but it's a step in the right direction. And I think those guys needing the tour to succeed is only beneficial for the tour. They now just have more skin in the game. They're going to want to do more of the walk and talks or whatever you feel is going to grow the game.
Time now for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, 19 plus. Bet responsibly. A little afternoon action for the Blue Jays in Kansas City with Jose Berríos on the mound against Cole Reagans. Blue Jays trying to secure the series split, and it is the Royals favored -120, Blue Jays even odds at +100. The total is 8.
Let's go under. Berríos on the bump. You're confident in him and the Blue Jays. Well, they're still the Blue Jays when they get up to the dish. So yeah, let's go under 8 there. You get it -115. I like it.
I like it a lot as well. The Blue Jays aren't scoring and Cole Reagans is really good. Jose Berríos has been out freaking standing. That ballpark, very difficult to score runs in as well. And just to, again, we're not telling you which way to put your money on this thing, but just an updated series odds, Leafs, Bruins, obviously with the Bruins now at the series lead, they are -278 to win the series. Maple Leafs +225. And that was the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, 19 plus. Bet responsibly. When we come back, former NHL goalie Devin Dubnyk as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.